Today's episode of The Beat is brought to you by the Waterworks and Header HVAC, now together to serve you better, and proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics.
Thank goodness for Football Fridays being back in our life, and thank you to all of you who want to be in a Freaky Friday mailbag on The Beat, presented by the Waterworks. Welcome in. That's Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward, and I think, Berm, our audience, Ohio State fans, I think that Venn diagram probably is about a complete circle. They're fired up for football.
Yeah, how could you not be? I mean, everyone watched that Bengals preseason opener on Thursday night, right? It was awesome. It was really well played, you know, because people just love football, and you're going to get it. And high school football is back. College football is back. The NFL is back. The long national nightmare is over. We can move on with our lives. We can talk ball. We've seen
What was your favorite part of that preseason game on Thursday night?
Oh, mostly that time when the Bengals played the Lions, and it was like a reminder that Lions and Tigers sometimes don't get along.
Oh.
You know?
I thought you were the one that wanted to be more honest and transparent about our recording schedule.
I just think that everyone had such a good time watching that game last night. I imagine everyone's having a tough time waking up today. Am I right?
Oh, my goodness.
Woof.
Well, I can tell by the number of submissions into the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com that people are fired up. And I kind of mentioned this with Ohio State players and coaches and the program as a whole on Thursday on Snappy Jays. And I think it applies to the excitement level of Scarlet and Gray fans. Like last year, I know that this is never going to be across the board true for everyone. You get a little bit of a honeymoon period, especially if you don't have to go work out in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and practice every day and you're still trying to win something. I'm not saying that they didn't, but like it feels like the climb back to the top of the mountain has more people engaged with training camp, ready for the opener, than maybe at this time a year ago.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a byproduct of so many unknowns and so many new players and faces that people don't really aren't really familiar with. Some of that may just be because this season is shaping up to be one that is going to be memorable for a number of reasons. Ohio State has one of the toughest schedules we've ever seen it play. I think it gives people an opportunity to care a little bit more about how things look in August, because how things look in August are probably going to be pretty pivotal in September. Yep. In October, in November, in December, hopefully for Ohio State. So years past, yeah, you had the Texas game last year, the season opener, and then you're like, well, we don't really have to pay attention to anything.
Training camp 2.0.
So that's not the case this year. I think people are fired up. It's a really exciting team. There's a lot of really good players, but there's a lot of players that people don't know a lot about. So it gives folks, I think, something to be excited about.
Yeah, so more questions than we could possibly get to, but I appreciate everyone.
Today. So, we'll get to them eventually.
Just not today. They're in there. And I know that I make this promise a lot. Maybe they'll just be a bonus mailbag. Hey, I don't know. Maybe there will be. We got free time.
We got all the time in the world.
We do. And we'll just dive right in right here with Norm. He's following up from something that he sent earlier in the year, Berm. He said, given the change in roster from last year, how do you grade the projected too deep this year compared to last year? You told me to follow up on this after spring practice. I will send it to you now as preseason camp has started. Note that he did not say fall camp. He wanted that pointed out there, I think primarily
well done
for television's Adam King's purposes. And there's a lot more info to weigh in on this subject. What say you now? That's from Norm.
I think we have repeatedly talked about the depth of this team and how we think it's the deepest Ohio State's been maybe ever. From position to position. I don't think that ultimately my feeling has changed in that it's going to lack some of the top end players, especially on defense, but I think that you are going to see a defense that is much harder for opposing teams to figure out. Last year's team, again, some of this is related to the offenses that Ohio State played, but they were basically, that defense was on the field for like 44 snaps a game, something kind of ridiculous. Yes. That's not going to be the case this year. So you're going to need to use that depth a little bit more. I think you might see a defense that takes more chances, makes more mistakes. But to the heart of the question, are they deeper? I truly believe this is as deep an Ohio State team as we've ever seen from top to bottom.
And, you know, I'm going to hone in on the way that Norm worded this. Grade the too deep. If you're talking about high-end, first-round NFL draft talent, I don't think there's as much of it, and it'd be hard to duplicate that on a year-in, year-out basis. You know, maybe down the road, you know, when we're talking about Jay Timmons, Devin Sanchez, like collectively, but but not for one draft class. Like 2027 will not match what 2026 did in April for the Buckeyes. But, and Matt Patricia talked about this on Thursday after practice, the number of players at his disposal, and it means more when he says it than when we do,
yeah,
that it is a deeper pool of athletes, potentially a more versatile pool of defensive players than he had a year ago. And it's a age-old question. Like, which would you rather have? Yeah. You know, if you could take Sonny Styles and Caleb Downs back, obviously you would do that. Is there a benefit instead? Can plan B, can the other door over here where you have three players trying to account, you know, for what Caleb Downs could do, does that quote-unquote mitigate the risk if you have injury? It wouldn't wipe out your entire season. This team might be better equipped to handle that over the course of a season, especially if they do have to play more snaps than they did a year ago.
Well, I think that's ultimately the rub here, is that these players on the two deep this year are actually going to play a lot. And last year's two deep included guys like Bryce West and Aaron Scott that, like, you thought, hey, you feel pretty good if you have to get to them, but those guys didn't play. And there's probably a reason for that. There's the reason that Ohio State didn't really feel like they could go beyond the third safety. If Lorenzo Styles wasn't out there, you know, Leroy Roker, Bryce West, those guys weren't really in play until the end of the season. That's when Leroy Roker started to emerge. So,
I mean, and same for Mylon Graham or Quincy Porter at wide receiver.
Right. And I think this year you have more playable depth at every position, but I don't know if that's a byproduct of lacking the Caleb Downs or Sonny Styles types, or if it's just a, or if the lack of depth that was playable a year ago was because of those guys, because they were so good, you couldn't take them off the field. So I think that in the big picture, the two deep is deeper, but it's probably not better, because how do you get better when you don't have first-round picks out there like they did a year ago?
Well, and I think we've only been talking about the defense. On offense, the quarterback depth chart is the same, mm-hmm, as Julian saying, ahead of Tavian St. Clair. Both of those guys should be better than a year ago. The running back depth chart, you lose C.J. Donaldson and James Peoples off of that, but Bo Jackson had already ascended to the top of it a year ago in season. If Isaiah West is in that role, or Jacoby Jackson, you know, the three of them splitting carries the way we think that they likely will, that seems like a potentially better scenario than a year ago. Again, that's a bet on Bo Jackson elevating from where he was last season, and Isaiah West being fully healthy. We'll see what Jacoby Jackson provides. You lose Carnell Tate off that depth chart at wide receiver, but it does seem like between what they brought in with Kyle Parker, Devin McEwen, Brock Boyd, Chris Henry Jr., that that's a group that has more game-ready players than maybe a year ago at this time. Tight end is tougher. I don't think the tight end depth chart is better than when you had two draft picks at the top of it.
No, that seems...
But offensive line, I think we would be in complete agreement. There's more than we've seen in 15 years.
Yeah, for sure. And I think even the conversation about the wide receivers is fair to ask, because, yeah, you had five-star Quincy Porter and five-star Mylon Graham as your backups a year ago. They didn't play. You have backup five-stars like Chris Henry Jr. and Jerquaydon Guilford this year. We don't know yet how much they're going to play, but it sure seems like Cortez Hankton has a eye for rotating a little bit more than Brian Hartline did. We'll see. But some of that is just going to be, is Brandon Ennis better than he was a year ago? And again, the idea that a lot of folks have is it's people can't improve over time. And I think if you just look at Brandon Ennis and you see the way he's changed his body, I think that will correlate to being a little bit more explosive on the field. I'm not saying he's ever going to be, you know, Garrett Wilson, but he's out there and he's going to play a lot. But you lost the number four pick in the NFL draft at wide receiver. So how do you say you're better? Is the two deep better? I don't think that we can know that at wide receiver until we see what Chris Henry and Brock Boyd and Jerquaydon Guilford provide. But I think the one deep at wide receiver is better because you have more, not better, but like you have more playable options out there.
Yeah.
I don't think we would have seen at any point in training camp a year ago, or did we see in training camp a year ago, any point where Mylon Graham or Quincy Porter was out there with the ones at wide receiver like Brock Boyd was on Saturday when we got to see them.
No, that didn't happen.
So, you know, maybe you feel more confident in the complete depth there, but maybe not the immediate playing too deep.
Also, Jeremiah Smith is back, and he's probably better too.
He looks better. He looks much more svelte than he did a year ago. I think he got a little too bulked up for his sophomore season, after, which is a normal response to finally getting into college and getting beat up and feeling how much more physical the game is. I think that made sense. But now you realize that maybe you can tweak it a little bit.
I mean, you're not as bulked up.
I'm not as bulked up as I once was. This shirt used to be tight on me, and now it's loose like a dress, which is highly unfortunate. But
you look like a smooth skin dolphin.
I look like a dolphin. I told you last week the hardest thing about losing all the weight I lost was adding new parts to the wardrobe. Some of it is still old. So when the fan, we get some new gear, I won't be looking like I'm wearing a muumuu, but I do, thanks to Awaken 180. Awaken 180 can make no guarantees that your clothes are going to look better on you until you buy new clothes. But they can't.
They're not in charge of your wardrobe.
They can't make guarantees about how much weight you're going to lose. But I can tell you, I lost 40 pounds in 8 weeks. He lost 40 pounds in 8 weeks. And I can tell you that they will give you coaching for life and an app that will help you stay on track as long as you're in the program and as long as you're doing it. It has been a truly easy thing to do, which is not something I would have anticipated. If you go to awaken180weightloss.com, you can start your journey and get healthy and then eventually buy new clothes so you don't look like you're wearing a muumuu. That's
well said. Kellen has question number two. Asked in the spring about the line of scrimmage in Ohio State seemingly lacking some of that rock off the ball, dominate, be aggressive at the point of attack, and push you back no matter what mentality in crucial moments in big games. Observing some practices, albeit mostly unpadded, and being around the team all year, does it appear the offensive line has taken on more of that mentality under Arthur Smith's tutelage? How do you think this will translate to the field and the matchup games on the schedule? Is there a lineman or a group of them who have been leaders of the pack, fostering that attitude? Curious to get your thoughts on all of this with a little less than a month out from the road game in Austin. I think this is a nasty bunch, I'd say that. I mean, the true evaluation, you know, Kellen, obviously, you know, it won't come until you're playing Texas in one of the best defensive lines, most talented defensive lines in the country. Yeah. But, you know, the same thing that you mentioned about players improving from 1 year to the next, you know, it's multiple years stacked. It's not just Ohio State stacking days on the offensive line. It is, you know, Luke Montgomery for multiple years, Carson Hinsman for multiple years, Josh Padilla, you know, he doesn't have the in-game body of work to build on, but it's multiple years in the weight room and getting ready for this moment. Phillip Daniels has now a full year under his belt. When Austin Saraveld comes back from whatever this precautionary scenario is for him, that's 3 years, 4 years of growth and development. And it doesn't always have to, and in fact, it doesn't usually come in positive moments. You have to have the adversity. And as Ryan Day says all the time, you have to have the scars. You have to suffer setbacks to learn and get better. It'd be great if that never happened and everybody's growth was a smooth linear process with nothing but success.
Smooth like a dolphin.
Smooth like a dolphin. But that is not the way the real world works. And so, you know, I do push back a little bit. I thought the smash mouth, rock off the ball, bury your opponent stuff did happen in a crucial moment that won hardware in the big house. Now, I understand fully what happened the next two games right after that. And also, I'm sure Kellen knows and everybody else who's been listening for the last 8 months, I don't put the onus solely on the offensive line for what happened in the last two games. There's part of it that belongs to them, and they're not going to hide from that. Those names that I mentioned, Luke Montgomery, Carson Hinsman, Austin Saraveld, Phillip Daniels, they all own that fully. Will they be better, nastier, more aggressive? I don't think that's just a product of Arthur Smith. I think their coach suffered a setback last year. The head coach of the program doesn't like losing games. And you have 8 more months of workouts under Mickey Marotti. He doesn't like losing games either.
And to the point of the question, I think it was clear a year ago that Ohio State felt there were spots on the offensive line that didn't have that attitude and didn't have that fire and didn't have that I'm going to go out there and bury you approach that was the reason why Josh Padilla was being moved into the starting lineup last October and didn't get a chance to because of injury. I'm going to tell you, if you go back to the 2024 playoff run, there's plenty of that attitude from Luke Montgomery, from Carson Hinsman, from Austin Saraveld, but it also was a byproduct of running backs that were wanting to smash you in the face. And I think that that was something that was a little bit lacking a year ago, and we'll see if that changes this year. But these guys are not happy with the way last year ended, certainly. They are understanding that there is an expectation, not just now from Tyler Bowen after his first year in the program, but Arthur Smith's entire mentality, his entire approach up front is bury the guy in front of you. I don't think that that is something that's going to be taken lightly. And Phillip Daniels, is one of the nastiest players I've ever watched on the field. So he is aggressive. He is angry. I think that you will see a more
wild card.
He's a bit of a wild card. He's got some shankability. I think if this line shapes out the way we think it is with Josh Padilla, right guard, and then whatever the combination of tackles ends up being with Austin Sarrivelt, I believe staying at left tackle, provided that he's able to, I think you're going to have plenty of this nasty disposition, and you're going to get it from guys like Ian Moore, who have really taken to this idea of like, this is actually fun to bury people. Gabe Van Sickle, the way that he attacks in the run game. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of that from this group this year. I think you're going to see a lot of those fist pumps and, you know, first down machinations that we've seen guys make in the past, and not in a mocking, you know, Drew Aller way or whatever the Buckeyes were doing it before. But you see the difference in the offensive line when it has that nasty slob mentality. And I don't think anybody in that room is at all satisfied with how last season ended. So there will be chips on the shoulders.
Yeah. Thank you for that question, Kellen. This comes from Chris in DC. Hi guys. Love your content. Thank you very much. Here's a question that I think you could help a lot of Bucks fans out with. By that, I mean cope psychologically by answering this. Why would Ohio State ever take Jeremiah off the field inside the 10-yard line? To me, if they leave him in and spread him out, it forces the defense to either play him one-on-one, in which case we should automatically throw him either a slant or fade, take your pick based off the matchup he has, or the defense must shade a secondary player toward his side of the field, which removes one defender from the box and helps the run game. Do you think with Jeremiah chasing the all-time Ohio State receiver touchdown record, the coaches will buy into this thinking? Conversely, if the coaches take JJ off the field inside the 10-yard line, can we agree they are committing coaching malpractice? Thanks for answering and continuing to bring us more content. I would say I completely agree with the schematic piece. I don't think that the statistical component is going to weigh into Ryan Day's mind, Arthur Smith's mind. We addressed that a couple weeks ago with the Heisman Trophy race as well, you know, tying that in. If you're going to get those targets, if you're going to chase that down, does the Heisman matter to Ryan Day? And you and I kind of disagreed, I think, a little bit on the surface about it, at least, you know, whether he would chase it. I think we agree with that, whether it's important to him.
Yeah.
You think it is a little bit more than I do. So I don't think that they will keep him out there solely to break all those records. I mean, Jeremiah, I think, is going to do that, and he's going to get the triple crown of those all on his own without it having to be force-fed to him. He is that good, and this offense is going to be more dynamic, and I think it's going to be more creative, specifically in the red zone anyway. And I think Arthur Smith did get to a little bit of this point, and he wasn't addressing the red zone corrections specifically, yeah. But he does very much appear to be in the mindset of you don't take your best players off the field, and you incorporate them into your offense as much as you possibly can. If this hypothesis from Chris is correct, which I think it is, in forcing defenses to account to Jeremiah Smith, Arthur Smith's going to know that too. And I think he's going to use it to his advantage. And the four tight end stuff that we saw last year, the 13 personnel, and when you had both JJ and Carnell Tate off the field,
yeah, well,
I think we can all agree that that was probably not the best use of resources.
I don't think it takes a rocket surgeon to understand that Jeremiah Smith being on the field makes it more difficult to cover Ohio State's offense. Why the Buckeyes were so enamored with that approach last year, I just have no idea. I think everyone agrees that it is one of those perplexing things that we saw happen over and over in 2025. I don't think it will be the case this year. If it is, it's because Jeremiah Smith is gassed or he's hurt. He will not be coming off the field. I think you will see him in different spots. I think that there's always a time and a place for the biggest personnel you can put out there. And I understand that, you know, there's going to be moments where even if you have 13 personnel out there, like I think you can find other ways to get Jeremiah Smith to stay on the field. 14 is a little different, but
He can be the running back.
He can line up at tight end. We saw one of the most famous plays in the Jim Tressel era was Ted Ginn lined up at tight end on a fourth and on a short yardage situation against Michigan where he busted a play action pass down the middle of the field for a touchdown. Like you can, the minute you run Jeremiah Smith out there at tight end, what is the defense going to do? They're going to be completely perplexed. So you can get there, and Jeremiah Smith, I mean, it's not cope. It's not like we're not trying to say anything that people don't know. Like Jeremiah Smith needs to be on the field.
I suspect that he will be.
Yes, we all approve of that message.
That would be my hope and expectation as well. Apologies. I may have missed the the name on this email, but it is still in mailbag. So I'll give you credit for it later on, or I'll look it up and have Berm add it to the graphic, even though I'm not talking about it right now. But this is a recruiting question, obviously for Berm. But he does include me and said, "Hey guys, nothing better in the recruiting world than locking down a five-star quarterback commit. About Christopher Vargas, how good is the competition he plays against? Rivals ranks St. John's Preparatory School number 505 nationally, and I've never heard Massachusetts described as a hotbed of football talent. Has anything been said about him transferring out of state to a more nationally known program to face better teams? How does he compare to Brady Edmonds? I ask this because Brady was also a five-star top 10 recruit at the time of his commitment. Thanks for the entertaining shows and all the intel."
That's a good question. I mean, I think especially considering what we've watched and witnessed in the last 18 months of Tavian St. Clair's transition from Bell Fountain to Ohio State, the physical tools are very, very apparent, but you have to find ways to compete. You have to find ways to play in an offense that is going to challenge you. There is significant differences in the offense that Brian St. Pierre, the head coach there, for Christopher Vargas deploys. He's a former NFL quarterback himself. Like, I think he understands, he's getting high level coaching concepts, even if he's not playing the best competition. That is a difference, I think, between what we would have seen with Latavian, who was put in a position at Bell Fountain where, you know, he was like, just go do what you do. And that's well and good, but that doesn't work when you get to college ball. Not at the highest level. It is certainly the thing that people are going to worry about with Christopher Vargas. There has not been any discussion about early enrollment or reclassifying or changing schools. I can understand why people would think that necessary, but one of the reasons you commit this early is so that you can enjoy your time in high school and continue to get better. And again, he has a really good quarterback coach as his high school coach and with Brian St. Pierre, and he has high-level coaching from the M2 Passing Academy up there in Massachusetts, which Tavian St. Clair, another example, like, did not do any of the private quarterback coach stuff that a lot of kids have done to be more refined as a prospect. How does he compare to Brady? I think that that's another fair conversation. Brady's 6'5", 240. Chris is 6'5", 200 pounds right now. He's not going to get to 240. He's not as, I don't want to say, Brady is a little less mobile than Chris. Neither of them are burners. There's a lot of similar traits when it comes to size, but the accuracy, the ability to feather the ball in, the ability to layer the ball into coverage is something that Chris is probably ahead of Brady at, where Brady's arm is just like, I'm going to throw the ball through that wall there. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what Ohio State really likes. And this is 3 years of evaluating him already for Ohio State, for Ryan Day, for Billy Fessler. I think if they had any doubts about his processor or his ability to read a defense or understand concepts that they wanted to coach, they would have been a little bit more willing to push for a later decision and let the chips fall where they may if he went somewhere else. But I think that the desire to accept a commitment this early, three different evaluations that Ohio State's had of him in person on their campus over the last three summers, I don't think that they have any concern about his play of his level of competition, but I can understand and appreciate the question.
I think it's really, this is not new. Ryan Day and Billy Fessler, anybody else that's been in that quarterback room evaluating Mark Pantoni, you said both Brady Edmonds and Chris Vargas are 6'5". They have different physical profiles. They just take Luke Fahey in the previous cycle, yep, under 6 feet tall. You know, you think about Justin Fields compared to Dwayne Haskins, or, you know, CJ Stroud compared to Will Howard. There's not just one prototype that Ryan Day seems to want to work with. And I know that when we ask him about it, well, you find the extraordinary trait, mm-hmm, and then you build around that. It's interesting to me how willing he is to open up the possibilities that the quarterback position can be played a bunch of different ways. Because I think that's sometimes what gets coaches, evaluators in trouble, is they, and this is a completely different position, but thinking about Caden McDonald in Georgia, like, if you box yourself into that, Ryan Day's never done that with quarterback, and it's the most important position on the field.
He's never done it with any of his approach to anything, really. I mean, that's what we have talked about at length over these last few years, is his willingness to adapt and understanding that every year you're going to have a different group of quarterbacks to choose from. So you have to find the guy that has what fits your program. The elite trait conversation has not changed. But as I talked about the other day with Luke Fahey, Luke Fahey's biggest trait is his processor and his ability to understand the game. If that is the one above all else that Ryan Day is still looking for. So when you have questions, or when Ohio State has questions about whether or not a quarterback prospect is going to be a fit, that is always going to be, does he have this? Is he there? Now, if you are one of those guys that has just like superhuman athletic ability or traits like CJ did with throwing the ball, or Justin Fields did just with his arm strength and his athleticism, then you can start to measure out the ingredients a little bit and be willing to take a little bit off here because you're getting more here.
Yeah.
But the level of competition for quarterbacks, especially ones who are very active in the 7-on-7 circuit, especially ones who have private training, especially the ones who get coached up by a former NFL quarterback, I think that that's a little bit different priority for Ohio. It becomes less of a talking point for them because they have so many other data points they really like about Chris.
All right. Great question. Appreciate that. A 5 for Friday. We'll get to this from Tyler. Apologize for the ones that we did not get to. We'll double back at some point. I promise we'll make an effort to do that. We got so much time right now. And all we're wanting to do is talk about ball on the beat presented by the Waterworks. Tyler says, now that it's been 7 months or so, can you share any rumored potential transfers that didn't come to fruition? 2 over-unders, 22 offensive players getting legit snaps this season. That seems under to me on first blush.
What
depends on getting legit? It's 22 offensive players.
Read the rest of the question.
17 defensive players getting legit snaps on, you know, that side of the football. I think that I'm definitely over on that. Side note, I am going to my first Columbus Crew game in late September. Awesome. Go Crew. I believe I remember the Ward family attends a good amount of Crew games. What can I expect from the experience? Last one first. The new stadium is fantastic. Everything is walkable in downtown Columbus. You're going to have a great time. I recommend it. I don't know where your seats are, but it's the most fun to be in the Nordic and standing and singing and maybe having a soda pop or two. I think you're going to have a great time. Let us know if there's any way that we can help you prepare for that. As we are trying to prepare everyone else for Ohio State's opener, we'll take the transfers last before we get out of here, Berman.
Sure.
22 offensive players getting legit snaps this season. We can go through that. It depends on legit. Are we talking like high leverage moments? I assume that.
I'd go under.
I think there's a possibility of 22 defensive players and 17 offense.
Yeah, I think it's probably closer to that. Obviously, a quarterback, you only expect one guy to get legitimate snaps or a host of snaps.
He's probably building in what we've talked about, that there could be, you know, 6 wide receivers playing.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one of those things where I'm from Missouri on, because I want to believe that that's the case. But I don't know that it is. We'll find out. It seems like that's possible. Let's go 4 running backs. So that's 5 offensive players. Let's go 5 wide receivers.
You're basically over already.
That's 10. That's only 10 guys. And then you got 6 offensive linemen and 4 tight ends. That's 21. okay.
So you can see how he got to that number.
Okay. Yeah, I can see it now. I'm still going to go under. I'm going to say 21.
Okay.
But I would like a parameter for what percentage of snaps of their position they're getting to qualify. But I would say 21, because I think you're going to see 4 tight ends be used pretty regularly. 7 offensive linemen, that's 11. 5, 16.
Now you're over again.
Tyler,
you know this isn't a math show. Come on, man.
Can I get a push? Can I get a push on that? Because I think 22 might be a fair number. Again, I need parameters of how this is actually being viewed.
Yeah, I would still go under. It's not. It's pretty close to 22 if you're adding in all of those tight ends and what you're defining. Because let's take Nate Roberts last year. He only, I don't remember what the total was. It was under 100, right?
Snaps.
Yeah, but he was getting high leverage opportunities when they're putting him in at fullback, you know, against Texas in the red zone. Those are legit snaps. I think you'd have to count those, right?
It said 265.
Oh, okay. Well,
between offense and special teams.
That's more than I thought it was. But again, sometimes I'm wrong. And I obviously was on that snap count total. But that would clearly count then, because you're talking about 4 tight ends and someone who might play fullback.
That's just the quick Google search. That does not seem right to me.
I don't think that's right.
That seems like too many. So it's going to be right around that number. And on defense, I'm decidedly in the, I think 17 is too low. I think that's going to be closer to 20.
Yeah.
As far as the transfers, I don't want to besmirch anybody because we have seen very little football of these guys. I think that there's an expectation when...
He's talking about guys that Ohio State did not get, Berm.
Oh, reread that, if you may.
It's been 7 months or so. Can you share any rumored potential transfers that didn't come to fruition? So guys that Ohio State may have been involved with. And I think he's probably, if I had to guess, more wondering about the likes of a Chaz Coleman. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I think it's not a secret that Ohio State was prepared and thinking that it may have to take a running back out of the transfer portal. So
there was definitely discussion about that with some players who never ended up entering the portal. Obviously the Chaz Coleman conversation was pretty deep. Ohio State was pretty close there. Decided that because they had some concerns about some medical stuff that it wasn't really worth the investment at that point. There were other receivers ahead of Devin McEwen and Kyle Parker that Ohio State really was into. Two of them ended up at LSU, which is ironic, I guess, considering that's where Cortez Hankton comes from. Ohio State would have taken a different kicker if they would have had their first pick, I think. Robbie Disher coming from Illinois, I think you can probably guess who I would be talking about. Because I believe...
Familiarity.
I believe there was some familiarity there. That's the thing. Like, there was this belief that Ohio State was slow playing the transfer portal or didn't know who they were pursuing. Yeah, I mean, Dominic McKinley, for example, another guy that if he would have entered the portal, I think Ohio State would have been involved. There was discussion again about, is Damon Wilson worth kicking the tires on opposite Kenyatta Jackson? But some of the stuff and the ask there financially was just a little crazy, as it was when he left Georgia and went to Missouri. The Buckeyes got exactly who they wanted in the secondary with Earl Little and Terry Moore and Dominic Kelly. That was what they wanted. Christian Allegro was the only linebacker James Laurinaitis had any interest in, from what I understand. So I don't think there were a bunch of misses. I mean, even when players like the offensive lineman from Jordan Seaton, when he went into the portal out of Colorado, Ohio State was not going to make a move there because of the cost, number one, but also because they felt like, hey, we have the most experienced offensive line in football returning. Let's not upset the apple cart there. Now people can say what they want, I guess. But I don't really think that I would consider – the only position I would say that they truly had higher players on the board than they got would have been wide receiver, but that doesn't even really include Devin McEwen because he was in that group of three guys that they really wanted. So, and that's understandable when you just lost Brian Hartline and Cortez Hankton starts his job in January.
Yeah, I think it turned out pretty well for him. Based on what we're just talking about with the potential for six and bringing in Brock Boyd, Chris Henry Jr., Jaquaden Guilford, along with Kyle Parker and Devin McEwen. I mean, that.
Well, because.
Just stack that up. Yes.
Well, especially now because those guys, Kyle Parker and Devin McEwen, have an opportunity to play 2 years at Ohio State now, which they didn't when they transferred in. So that addition could actually be much more beneficial than we're letting on or than we've considered because. Ohio State right now in the class of 2027, a wide receiver has two commitments and a primary reason that they're backing away and letting the board sort of settle is that you have an opportunity to not just bring back Devin McEwen and Kyle Parker if you want. You could bring back Brandon Ennis next year if you want. So everything is a little bit different.
Or Jeremiah Smith.
Or that. If Jeremiah wanted to come back, he can come back for two more years after this. So I think – there was, again, the belief that Ohio State was, like, failing in the transfer portal, and they got 90% of their top targets.
Yeah. I think the hysteria at the beginning of January, certainly I can understand, and I've been there. Whether usually with me, it's coaching searches more than the transfer portal. You need things done immediately. You want answers. The discourse around what Ohio State was doing in the transfer portal and the number of defections in this offseason, we said it then, and it's still true now. Outside of, you know, maybe two cases, they weren't surprised by any of that. And they could have made efforts to retain those guys that they left. There was, I didn't sense, and you tell me if I'm wrong, any panic from the coaching staff or the personnel staff about what they were doing. So it's much tougher to, I think, trust that there's a plan when you want things to be happening immediately. And I get that 100%. But I don't think it was lip service. I don't think they were blowing smoke. When you look at the makeup of this transfer portal class, I don't think that there's all that much that they needed to do differently.
No, and I think some of the panic was a result of just watching all the guys leave without other guys coming in. But when Aaron Scott discussion started, when Bryce West discussion started, oh, there were people at Ohio State who told me, like, I think maybe the 2nd or 3rd of January, we know exactly who our safeties are going to be in the transfer portal. We are not worried. And they're like, okay, but no, we just need to let things settle. And then you get Terry Moore and Earl Little. Like, that is exactly what Ohio State wanted. They had a plan for it. Christian Allegro was the only guy. Any discussion about Raheem Biles or anything else was just not accurate. So I don't think that Ohio State feels like in any way that they didn't get what they wanted. And I think Buckeyes fans should be pretty excited, because this is the new era of college football. This is the way it's going to be. This whole discussion about 51 new players this year, like, this is going to be the new normal. It's going to be 40 to 50 new guys every year.
Yeah. And all those guys will be back on the practice field later on Friday at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. We won't be there back until Saturday. Ryan Day will talk and address the media after that scrimmage, this key week for the Buckeyes as they really get in here to the heart of August. And we will find a way to get to more of your questions in a mailbag on the beat presented by Waterworks. Thank you to everybody for sending them in. We appreciate you greatly. He's Berm. I'm Austin. We can't wait to talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.